Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Maria Garcia. When author Richard Russo first published his Pulitzer Prize-winning novel Empire Falls in 2001, his readers were caught off guard. Most people weren't expecting the book to take the turn it did, to a horrific school shooting. The novel and the ensuing television miniseries follows Miles Roby, who lives in a small, declining town in Maine. His daughter, Tick, is a kind, sensitive teenager with a complicated friendship with John Voss, an emotionally disturbed boy at her high school who is endlessly bullied. John Voss is the one who commits the shooting, which kills some of his classmates. By now, the school shooting of Empire Falls is widely known, and in many ways, the shock of a school shooting in novels, in art, and in life has worn off. But 17 years later, author Richard Russo is still grappling with the subject, and he joins me now from Portland. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Maria. How are you?
Well, thanks for joining us. Richard, you've written an op-ed for the New York Times entitled, "How Does a Novelist Write About a School Shooting?" reflecting on your book. But to begin, I'm hoping you can share with us the story of what happened on that first stop on your book tour for Empire Falls back in 2001.
Yes, I was caught completely off guard, although I probably shouldn't have been. My book tours usually started out somewhere on the East Coast, and I would gradually work my way west. But for some reason, this book tour, I started out in Denver. And I probably should have realized that this book about a school shooting was going to resonate particularly there because, of course, Littleton, Colorado was a suburb, and that's where the most horrific school shooting, Columbine, had taken place, I guess, a year or two before. So I wasn't really attuned to that as I should have been, but there in the audience was a woman who confronted me kind of at the end of the reading, and she was clearly just distraught. The novel had opened up a wound, and that had probably begun to heal over, and here I was ripping off the scab. And she said, "How could you?"
Yeah. Well, she specifically asked you, you know, how could you trade on her grief for money? And I'm sure you've wrestled with this as a writer, as an artist. How do you explore something so dark and so raw in a meaningful way, in a way that leads you perhaps to a new place of discovery and that doesn't feel exploitative to the people suffering from these tragedies?
Right, exactly. And what I, you know, what I would have loved to explain to this woman and couldn't was that I wasn't trading on her grief. If I was trading on anything, I was trading on my own dread, because I had two daughters who were just then. One was in, I believe, in middle school, and the other was in first year of high school, And I remember writing this novel as an exercise in dread. Both of my daughters, who had been, you know, so free about telling their mother and me about everything that was going on in their lives, they were just beginning to have private lives of their own, which they deserved. But with every time I looked at them and realized that there were things that they could no longer necessarily talk about with their father, my sense of dread grew. And the writing of this novel was bringing myself right to the brink of my own terror, and probably making some sort of deal with myself that if I could face this down on the page, kind of minute to minute, what something like this would feel like to someone who is experiencing it. If I could somehow manage to do that on the page, maybe it wouldn't happen to me or anyone I loved in real life.
Hmm. So your exploration of the school shooting was, in essence, a coping mechanism in a way for a father whose daughters' lives were becoming more opaque.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So part of the reason your readers, I think, were so shocked with the school shooting in your book is because, as you write, we were so innocent back then. I don't think we could have imagined a future where, for example, the parents of slain students are hosting fashion shows with bulletproof clothing, like some of the Parkland parents are doing here in Boston next week, as a form of protest. You know, this kind of future that we're living in now, the present, we couldn't have imagined it back then, I don't think.
Well, to some degree, and it's horrifying to even put into words, the question, if somebody's writing a school shooting novel now, the question has changed. The question when I was writing Empire Falls was, how could something like this happen? And I wasn't interested in, you know, the ideology of it. It never interests me that much when the left blames guns and the right blames mental illness or video games. You know, it's an abstract ideological sort of argument, and that doesn't interest me nearly as much as capturing the kind of granular detail that leads up to something like this. And so I was asking myself the question, how could this happen? What would it feel like? The question now has changed, I think. It's, how can this keep happening? How can it be, after all these years, after all these dead children, that we haven't somehow or other had a conversation about what means more to us in this country, our children or our guns? Somehow, how have we not had that conversation? And so I was interested in this, in the op-ed, of exploring that. And revisiting, and for me it was kind of painful to revisit because, you know, my girls that I was so terrified for back in 2001 and the years before that when I was writing this book, they're in their 30s now. And whatever the deal I made was, or imagined making, it's worked out. They're okay. But I have grandchildren now, and to be going back now as a grandfather, God, revisiting the same question, with the same sense of dread that I felt as a father, and to realize that in the interim I have become, well, I'm 69 years old now, and to realize that all of this time has come, and the sense of dread that I felt as a father, I'm now dealing with as a grandfather, and it does not make me happy one bit.
Right. Your book ends with optimism, though. It's a cautious optimism, but an optimism nonetheless, that a father can help his daughter heal from a school shooting. Are you as optimistic now as you were then?
Strangely enough, I am. I'm not optimistic on a kind of global or national level, because it seems to me that our leaders have failed us, and they continue to fail us epically. And I have no faith whatsoever that Congress, which seems to me to be, you know, bought and paid for by the NRA, it just doesn't seem to me that as we look towards a hopeful future, that we can depend on these people at all. They've shown themselves to be, you know, so gutless for so long. It doesn't make any sense to turn to them. We have to turn to each other. And as I wrote in this op-ed, the thing that was so amazing about this woman who was so distraught and who confronted me in Denver was that, you know, she could have, you know, stood up right at the beginning when I went up in front of that microphone. She could have stood up and denounced me right there. She could have asked that question that she asked me later privately. She could have said, "How could you trade on our grief for money?" Before I'd even had a chance to speak a word that day. But she didn't. You know, she waited in the book signing line, and she didn't come up to the front so that there would people behind her would overhear what she was asking me. She waited in her pain and her suffering, and waited until everyone was gone, and then she very quietly asked me that question that was just tearing her apart. So she was kind, and she was genuinely interested in what I have to say. And so on a kind of local level, I think the kindness and the generosity that she felt and she expressed, even in her, as distraught as she was and in as much pain as she was, it gives me hope for all of us that we're going to find a way in our own individual hearts. And I think novels and art I still have my faith, the faith in art, and my faith in my fellow citizens, that that these virtues, kindness, consideration, imagination, especially moral imagination, those things have not gone away. They're not particularly in favor right now, mm-hmm. but they haven't gone away, and they never will.
You know, Richard, though, as a country, in a way, we are carrying this collective trauma from school shootings. How do you see the novel as a way to wrestle with that trauma, knowing that art can also be triggering, that, as you said, it can open wounds?
There's something transformative about art, not just novel writing. There's something, it's the difference between ideology and experience.
Hmm.
Once you've lived something, what novels do is they exercise the moral imagination. And what ideological conflict, it really shuts that down. A good novel forces you not to just to encounter ideas. It forces you to live someone else's experience. And so the great works of literature, the great works of art have always asked us to forget about ourselves for just a minute and live someone else's life. And that's what makes it transformative. It opens our hearts. It opens our souls. And you can't do that, I think, sometimes without, you know, picking that scab, and we're going to bleed again a little bit. But in the end, the best art leads to healing, I think.
You know, the website Goodreads lists 72 books written about school shootings. Your book, though, apparently is not included on that list. So I assume there must be a few others that have been left out as well. As people are writing about this, do you ever worry that the portrayal of these events in our popular culture can further normalize them?
No, I don't think art does that, at least not the best of it. I don't worry about that. I think that can happen with exploitation.
Hmm.
I think that, movies that glorify violence can normalize violence, but art doesn't do that.
Hmm. Richard, the last question for you here. You know, we began by saying the shock of including a school shooting in a piece of fiction, any piece of art really, has worn off. Do you agree with that?
Well, I fear it's true. I think that since you were talking about Parkland earlier, what happened there for a time after that did capture our moral imaginations. But unfortunately, we live in a world right now where one atrocity follows another so closely that it's very difficult for anything to really get traction in our hearts and minds and souls. I would love to believe that it's not true. I would love to believe that. But I felt that way with every single school shooting. I felt I felt to myself, surely we're going to remember this. Surely we're not going to. Surely the pain of this is going to be with us for a very long time.
Right.
But we live in a world of internet clickbait and distractions, both political and cultural, and it's becoming just more difficult for any outrage to outlive the next outrage.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Richard.
Maria, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That's author Richard Russo joining us from Portland, Maine. You can find a link to his latest op-ed called How Does a Novelist Write About a School Shooting at our website, radioboston.org. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Maria Garcia. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.